Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Bidder webcast for the November 2020 auction to be held under AEP Ohio's Competitive Bidding Process, or CBP. My name is Chantal Lafasse. I'm from MIRA, the auction manager for this competitive bidding process. And I'm going to have with me today two colleagues from MIRA, Rachel Northcutt and Matt Pettit, to present some portions of this webcast. And we also have representative from AEP Ohio to help us in answering any questions you might have after the presentation. I'll start by some housekeeping here and a disclaimer that this presentation will contain statements that describe or refer to documents and agreements, and any such statements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by my reference to the governing documents for the auction under AEP Ohio CBP. And those governing documents include orders from the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, PUCO or commission, under the case numbers that are provided on this slide, 16-1852 and 17-2391, including the recent orders from July 15th and August 26th of this year. The bidding rules for the auctions under the competitive bidding process for AEP Ohio that are called the CBP rules, the Master Standard Service Offer, or SSO, supply agreement, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the Part 1 and the Part 2 application. All of these governing documents are provided on the CBP website, so we do invite you to visit the website to get complete documentation, those governing documents, as well as additional documents for the auction, and that website is aepohiocbp.com. I mentioned that myself and my two colleagues are from NERA, the auction manager for AEP Ohio. As such, we have a role of interface with the bidders in the sense that we provide answer responses to questions with the main point of contact with bidders. And we also ensure that bidder qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. Generally, we manage the competitive bidding process on behalf of AEP Ohio, and at the end of the auction, we provide a report to the commission or PUCO on the results of the auction. And generally, we ensure that all the rules, as approved by the commission, are followed throughout the auction process. In today's presentation, first I'll provide an overview of the auction that's coming up, including informing you at a general and higher level of certain new procedures that we are implementing in the wake of emergency measures to address COVID-19. We'll also have more details on those procedures in the application process of the presentation that Rachel is going to be telling you about a little later on. I'll also provide high-level description of the product design and provide a couple of specific provisions regarding the contract. And we mentioned that on the previous slide. So when I'm talking about the contract, I'm talking about the master SSO supply agreement. And finally, I will be also talking about the bidding and the auction. Rachel will talk about that, and Matt will walk you through the CBP website and the information that you can get from that website. You can ask a question during the webcast in writing at any time. You can use the WebEx interface for that purpose, locating the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen. You can select all panelists in the Ask box, and you can type in your questions. You can click Send to submit your questions. If you have a specific slide number that you want to give us, you can do that also. We'll try to respond as we go to questions, as we see them, if we can address them as we go, we'll do that. Otherwise, we'll pause at the end of the presentation and gather the remaining questions and take a little bit of time and then provide the responses back to you. The presentation will be posted to the CBP website, and any kind of questions and answers that we deal with during the webcast will be posted as FAQs on the CBP website. So let me start by a quick overview and talking first to one of the changes that we have for this auction and for the following auction, which is that those auctions will feature a 12-month product only. As originally scheduled, both the November 2020 and March 2021 auction had a 12-month and a 36-month products that were scheduled to be procured during these auctions. But with respect to the 36-month product, as I'm sure all of you know, there's a proceeding before the FERC regarding PJM's capacity market, and some of the base residual auctions that were supposed to have taken place to date will not have been taken place. So the capacity price for the 36-month product for all of the component delivery use of the 36-month product would not be known by the time the auction has to take place. So as a consequence, the Ohio Commission has issued an order and required AEP Ohio, as well as the other electric distribution utilities in the state, to procure 12-month products only for the two upcoming fall 2020 and spring 2021 auction. In response to this directive, AEP Ohio filed a motion to comply with this order and change its product terms under its Electricity Security Plan, or ESP, and this motion was approved by the Commission on August 26th. So the upcoming November auction, so fall 2020 auction, and the spring 2020 auction to be conducted in March, will each be set to procure 33 tranches of a 12-month product. That means that if you look at the product term and the ladder, and that's also kind of available on the website on the schedule tab, the upcoming auction will be the seventh in a series of auctions under this ESP, Electric Security Plan, ESP4 in this case. And it will be for 33 tranches of the 12-month product instead of a split between the 12 and the 36-month product. The auction for the spring 2021 is also shown here. And the other auction will be subject to a plan that AEP Ohio will be filing with the Commission for procurement of supply for SSO customers starting in June 2022. And beyond, and that's in compliance with the Commission order from July 15th. Just a brief summary of the prior auction. So the prior auction in March of this year was for two products, a 12-month and a 24-month product, each with a tranche target of 17 tranches. And that compares, so 34 in total for that auction is going to be 33 in the next two coming up. So roughly the same total number of tranches. And you see the clearing price here, the number of registered bidders, and the rounds, the number of rounds that the auction lasted. The clearing prices can be compared with the range of the starting prices for the auction, which was between $55 and $75 a megawatt hour. This was for delivery period starting June 1, 2020, while the two upcoming auctions will be for a supply period with a start date of June 1, 2021. I'll talk a little bit more about the product. So the product is a full requirements product, and that's memorialized and provided in detail in the contract, the master SSO supply agreement, and the SSO load for which we're providing and procuring supply is divided into 100 tranches. So each tranche is 1% of the load of SSO customers. And SSO customers are those customers who take retail generation service from AEP Ohio, and it does include PIP customers, percentage income plan customers. The delivery point under the contract is provided to you here. The P-Node ID is provided to you here. A winner at the auction that become an SSO supplier takes on the responsibilities of a load-serving entity, including scheduling SSO supply and making all arrangements necessary for delivery of SSO supply. As I mentioned, the total SSO load is divided into 100 tranches of 1% each. And for this upcoming auction, so this is summarizing some of the items and the parameters that we've already discussed on prior slides. The tranche target, or the number of tranches that are being procured in this auction, is 33, and the supply period starts June 2021 and ends in May 31st, 2022. There's a low cap, so there's a maximum on the amount that any bidder can bid and win in the auction. And that's set as a percentage of the tranche target, and that load cap is 26 tranches. Now, something to note here is that typically auctions are conducted on Tuesday of a given week. And for this cycle, given the election year, then the auction is taking place scheduled for Monday, November 2nd, instead of Tuesday. The auction format is a clock auction. So with a clock auction format, although there's a single product, there are multiple tranches of that product that are procured simultaneously through the auction, and there's also multiple rounds. So the 33 tranches are all procured simultaneously through the auction, and in each round, suppliers will be stating, so their bid is going to be stating, how many tranches that the supplier wants to supply at the price that has been announced by the auction manager. For the auction to continue from one round to the next, it has to be that there is excess supply. So in other words, the number of tranches that are bid exceeds the number of tranches that we're seeking to procure through the auction, namely 33. And if that's the case, the auction continues and the price that's announced by the auction manager is reduced, ticks down, and then new bids are taken at the new price. And this continues until we get to a point where the number of tranches that are bid is the number of tranches that is needed in the auction, and the auction closes at that point. The auction does establish a single clearing price. There is no seal bid round after the clock rounds. Bidders are providing exit prices on tranches that they no longer want to supply as they go. So some additional parameters for this upcoming auction, as we mentioned, 33 tranches of the 12-month product. The minimum and maximum starting prices are provided to you here. So $60 a megawatt hour for the minimum, $80 for the maximum. And what that means is that the prices in round one of the auction are going to be selected in the range between $60 and $80 a megawatt hour. We're also providing the megawatt measure for a tranche, which is based on the peak load contribution on the 5 highest coincident peak experienced by PJM in the prior year for SSO customers only. And that's given to you here as 24.50. Now, this is for reference and informational purposes only. The amount or the actual quantity to be delivered under the master SSO supply agreement will depend on many factors, including the migration of SSO customers to CREST providers and vice versa to competitive retail electric service providers. The last announcement is the seasonal factor. So there's a provision in the master SSO supplier agreement that the auction price, dollars per megawatt hour, may get multiplied by a seasonal factor, a certain factor for summer, a certain factor for winter. But in that case, we're announcing here that both seasonal factors are set to one. So the auction price becomes the price paid for each megawatt hour of load served. On this slide, you have a calendar with the key events of the auction process. So we're about 2 weeks, a little more than 2 weeks, from when the window to submit applications will open, and that's the part one window. The application process is in two parts. Part one, and we'll provide more detail on that, both in the later in this overview and in much greater detail later on the presentation. So the part one opens on September 18th. And the part one applications are then due on September 30th. These applications are evaluated and you then receive a notification of whether or not you have qualified to continue into the auction process no later than October 6th. If you receive a notification that you are qualified, then you can continue in the process and submit the part two application. The window opens the day after you receive the notification. And the part two applications are due on October 20th. About a week later, you will receive notification of whether you are successful in the part two process. And if you are, you can participate in a trial auction. So this is your opportunity to test the bidding procedures from wherever you're going to be to submit bids during the auction, make sure that all the systems are working. And then the auction itself starts, as I mentioned, Monday rather than Tuesday, this time around November 2nd. During this process, we're also going to provide additional announcements. So we've talked about the tranche target, the tranche size, megawatt measure, and the minimum and maximum starting prices today. We'll provide any updates that are needed to the seasonal factors or the megawatt measure by October 7th. And on October 28th, we'll provide only to bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 and the Part 2 applications, which we call registered bidders, only providing information to those registered bidders about the actual price in Round 1 of the auction that will be selected between the minimum and the maximum starting prices that we announced today. We talked about the application process, saying that it's in two stages, the Part 1 application and the Part 2 application. The Part 1 application will require you to provide contact information, basic company information, and also to upload inserts and other required documentation, financial documentation, for a creditworthiness assessment. Now, these inserts are a separate word form, some of which require a signature, and we'll be talking about procedures for that in a second. For the Part 2 application, you will also provide, check that the information you provided, the contact information you provided in Part 1 remains accurate, making any changes that are needed there, and providing an indicative offer, so an indicative number of tranches that you may be willing to bid in the auction at the minimum and the maximum starting prices, and providing financial assurances for that indicative offer in the form of a pre-bid letter of credit. And again, we'll be talking more about the pre-bid letter of credit in a second, or in terms of cash. So that has to be sufficient to support your indicative offer. So it has to be proportional to the indicative offer that you provided in the Part 2 application. So let me talk a little bit about the inserts. So as I mentioned, those are separate word forms, some of which require a signature and some of which require the signature to be notarized. the usual process that's been used in the past is for that insert, if it has to be signed, to be printed, for the individual, the representative, to sign the insert, to be get it notarized if required, and then scan back the insert into a PDF and upload it to the application website. The application process is entirely online. The forms are online. So that's the process, the normal process that has been used thus far. And you can certainly continue to do that if that process is available to you. In recognition that there may be some individuals and the participants in the auction that are working from home or that don't have the same kind of readiness access to be able to print, sign, or scan, or have access to a notary, those inserts can all also be submitted with a digital signature, by which we mean using a commercially available software like DocuSign, and also providing a document that allows the auction manager to verify the identity of the signatory. So when we talk about the digital signature, we're really talking about those two elements together of using a commercially available software for a digital signature and providing additional information to verify the identity of the signatory. We posted a guide to completing an insert using a digital signature so that you can see what it is that we're expecting in terms of additional documentation to verify the identity of the signatory. And a note here that we're making a distinction between a digital signature that is obtained through a commercially available software and an electronic signature, which we think more as a picture of your handwritten signature. So what we deem to be acceptable are digital signatures and not electronic signatures. And as I mentioned, Rachel will be providing more details on that. So this is an option here. You know, you can use the same process that you have used in the past if you're a previous participant and print, sign, have the signature notarized if needed, scan, and upload it back. But you have the option of also proceeding using a digital signature, and that will be acceptable. So while you have an additional option in terms of how you are going to be presenting the inserts with your applications, for the pre-bid letter of credit, there is a change that is required. So this is not a choice. This is replacing the process that existed with paper pre-bid letter of credit with using, for this auction, a standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit that accommodates submission of the pre-bid letter of credit via electronic means, so email, password protected, or some kind of secure file transfer. Those pre-bid, that pre-bid letter of credit will have to be provided to the auction manager at aep-cbp@nira.com, and hard copies will not be accepted. We've already posted the standard form of the letter of credit that has now changed to allow for the electronic submission of the letter of credit. And we have also posted modifications that are acceptable to that pre-bid letter of credit, taking into consideration the adjustments to the standard form that had to occur to accommodate electronic submission. So we certainly invite you to look at that well in advance of the process and to submit any comments or proposed modification from your bank that will be that the bank thinks are necessary for it to be able to issue the letter of credit. So that's the overview of the application process and a couple of high-level description of the changes given emergency measures enacted in the wake of COVID-19. if you are approved to participate in the auction following a successful Part 1 and Part 2 application, then you will participate in the auction. And once the auction is over, the auction manager presents a report to the commission, factual report on the auction, and the commission then takes a decision as to whether to accept or reject the results of the auction. The commission issues that decision within 2 days of the close of the auction, and should the commission not act within that window, the auction results are deemed accepted. Of note is that the commission may at some point publicly release some features of the auction results, such as the auction clearing prices or the name of the winning bidders from the auction. So that decision is within 2 days of auction close, and then within 3 days of the commission's acceptance of the results, if that is the decision of the commission, then it is expected that all bidders, winning bidders, will have executed the applicable contract, namely the Master SSO Supplier Agreement with AEP Ohio, as well as will have fulfilled any credit worthiness requirements that apply to them. I talked a little bit about the product already and the contract, the Master SSO Supplier Agreement. I'll just reiterate a couple of points here and talk about the credit requirements. So the SSO suppliers assume all the responsibilities of the load-serving entity in PJM. So they're responsible for providing a full requirement service, including energy capacity ancillary services, any other services as may be required by PJM to serve the SSO customers of AEP Ohio. And those SSO customers do exclude PIP customers. SSO suppliers bear all costs that are associated with this responsibility. In the Master SSO Supply Agreement, we can also look at Attachment F, which provides a sample PJM invoice or list of all the PJM billing line items and provides whether those PJM billing line items are the responsibility of the SSO supplier or of AEP Ohio. There are two separate credit requirements under the Master SSO Supplier Agreement, and correspondingly, there is an ability to have two separate unsecured credit lines. So the two credit requirements are, first, the Independent Credit Requirement, or ICR, and that's a fixed amount per tranche that's won under the agreement, and that amount also declines throughout the term of the Master SSO Supply Agreement. So that's the first credit requirement. The second credit requirement is an exposure, a mark-to-market exposure, that is based on the differences between the market price at any given point in time and the market prices in effect on the date that the auction was completed. Corresponding to these two credit requirements, there are two separate unsecured credit lines: the independent credit threshold, which is an unsecured credit line that can be applied towards the independent credit requirement, or ICR, and a credit limit, which is an unsecured credit line that can be applied towards the mark-to-market exposure. Both of these unsecured credit lines are calculated in accordance with the criteria that are set out in the Master SSO Supply Agreement. And the credit worthiness that you will be subject to in the Part 1 application, in part, is to give you a sense of what that evaluation consists of under the terms of the Master SSO Supply Agreement. During the term of the Master SSO Supply Agreement, then, you can take advantage of any unsecured credit line that you do have or provide any financial guarantees that are required to meet the credit worthiness requirement using a form of guarantee if you're relying on the financial standing of the guarantor or letter of credit. Both are attached to the Master SSO Agreement in terms of standard form or cash. And that completes our quick overview of a couple of the features and big themes regarding the master SSO supply agreement, and I'll pass it along to Matt to walk you through the information that you can find on the CBP website.
Thank you, Chantal. So in this section, I will provide an overview of the auction website. So the auction website is aepohiocbp.com, and it is the central source of information where bidders can find posted announcements relating to the auction, a schedule with important dates for the current auction, auction documents, as well as data provided by AEP Ohio. And bidders can navigate through the website by using the panel on the left-hand side of the screen, as shown here. So selecting the information tab will display the link to access the documents page, along with the links to the announcements and FAQs page. On the documents page, bidders can find the auction rules, the master SSO supply agreement, the pre-bid security documents, as well as the digital signatures guide that we mentioned earlier. Also on this page are the illustrated versions of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. And this presentation will also be posted to the documents page, and that is expected to be made available later today. Selecting the Data Room tab will bring you to the page with data which is made available by AEP Ohio, and that data includes hourly energy data, customer account data, PLC and MSPL data, and monthly switching statistics. And this data will be updated each month on or before the 20th of that month. To contact us, the auction manager, you can select the Contact Us page of the website, and here you can register to receive announcements about the auction, as well as any upcoming auctions. And you can register to receive login credentials as well to access the application forms to participate in the auction. You can ask a question by clicking on the Ask a Question link and filling out the required information as shown here. Your question will be submitted to the auction manager, and we will aim to provide a response within 2 business days. And lastly, you may also send us questions by email to aep-cbp@nera.com. And I will now hand it along to Rachel.
Thanks, Matt. Hello, everyone. In these next sections, I'll discuss the application process and review some of the information that bidders will need to provide with their online Part 1 and Part 2 forms. I'll then end today's presentation by providing an overview of the bidding process in the auction. So first, the applications to participate in the auction are completed online on a separate website that's different from the AEP-CBP website. And to receive login credentials to access the online Part 1 and Part 2 forms, you'll need to register for an account. If you're a returning bidder and have participated in the AEP auctions before, the auction manager will automatically send you your login credentials, so you won't need to register for an account again. But new bidders who have not participated in the AEP auctions should register for an account on the AEP CBP website by clicking on the Contact Us and then Register for an Application account on the left-hand side of the page. You can also send us an email to receive login credentials, but please make sure to include your first and last name, your company name, and contact information in case we need to reach you. So the Part 1 application process is streamlined for returning bidders in that some of the fields within the online Part 1 form will be pre-populated with information that was provided last time or the last time that you've participated. For example, the first section of the online Part 1 form will ask you to provide contact information for the bidder and for a main representative. For returning bidders, the contact information for the representative will be pre-populated with the information provided the last time you've participated. In this first section, you'll also have the option to name additional representatives or nominees to be included on all correspondence with the auction manager. The next section of the Part 1 form requires the bidder to provide information related to its status as a TJM member and to include whether it is currently a market buyer, market seller, and whether it is qualified as a load-serving entity. With the Part 1 application, bidders are required to make a number of certifications agreeing to the auction rules and to the terms of the master SSO supply agreement, and agreeing to keep certain auction-related information confidential. Bidders will also need to provide financial statements and credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing the bidder is relying. Note here that additional information will be required for bidders that are relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor. There is also a section in the Part 1 form where bidders may propose modifications to the pre-bid letter of credit. Bidders will be required to submit pre-bid security in the form of cash or a pre-bid letter of credit with the Part 2 application. So this section in the online Part 1 form provides an opportunity for you to propose changes to the standard form of this document. As was discussed earlier, the standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit is changed so that it may be sent to the auction manager electronically instead of in hard copy. So please review the standard form to see whether your bank requires you to propose any modifications ahead of the Part 2 application window. AEP Ohio will review any proposed modifications, and a response will be provided to the bidder indicating which changes are acceptable and which are not. And a preliminary list of acceptable modifications can be found on the document page of the website. So I'll take some time here to discuss one of the changes that we're making in response to COVID-19. So with the Part 1 and Part 2 applications, bidders will need to complete and upload separate Microsoft Word files called inserts. And beginning with this November auction, bidders may complete any required inserts by either printing, signing, having the signature notarized if needed, then scanning and upload the insert to the online form. Or bidders can complete an insert using a digital signature. If you're signing an insert using a digital signature, you'll need to use a program that allows the auction manager to verify the identity of the signatory, so a copy and pasted image of the signature will not be accepted here. Bidders can use programs such as DocuSign, Adobe Sign, or any other commercially available program, but again, we'll need to be able to verify the identity of the signatory. For us to do this, you'll have to provide additional information or documentation along with the insert. For example, if you are using DocuSign, you'll be required to provide an accompanying certificate of completion, which is an additional file that's generated using DocuSign. If you're using the program Adobe Sign, you'll need to provide the final audit report along with the insert. And as Matt mentioned, we've made available a guide to providing a digital signature on the inserts, and this document is available on the documents page of the website. So on the next few slides, I'll quickly illustrate the steps needed to complete an insert, first using DocuSign and then using a document signing certificate in Adobe Acrobat Pro. Note that DocuSign offers a free 30-day trial and also provides instructions for uploading files to their system and completing the digital signature process. So after completing digitally signing the insert, the completed file can be sent by the DocuSign account holder to other members of the bidding team. And these individuals, along with the account holder, will be able to access the certificate of completion that you'll need to provide to the auction manager with the insert. The certificate can be retrieved in at least two ways. You can either navigate to and then download the certificate of completion through email, or you can retrieve the certificate directly through the DocuSign website. The left-hand side of this screen shows the steps needed to download the certificate of completion through email. Using this method, once the document has been completed and signed, DocuSign should send a system-generated message to the account holder. Click on the View Completed Document link in the email, and then click on the Other Actions drop-down in the upper right corner of the screen. Click on View Certificate and then download the Certificate of Completion. You can also navigate to the certificate directly through the DocuSign website, and the steps for this are shown on the right-hand side of the screen. So after you complete the insert, click on Manage at the top of the screen to bring you to an inbox-like interface. On the left-hand side, click on Completed to view all of the inserts that you've completed in DocuSign. Click on the applicable insert, and then click the download icon near the right side of the screen. Here you can select all files and then download. Here's an example of a completed insert and a sample certificate of completion. You can see the name of the insert and the signer events in the certificate of completion. Please note, if you are completing an insert with a digital signature, you're not required to have the signature notarized. So you can see that this has been omitted in the example on the slide. So next, I'll review the steps to take to complete an insert using a document signing certificate in Adobe Acrobat Pro. Note here that this is not the same as using the software Adobe Sign. So Adobe Sign is acceptable to use to sign these inserts, but with it, if you choose this method, you'll have to give us the final audit report document. So to use a document signing certificate in Adobe Acrobat Pro, you'll first need to convert the insert to a PDF file, and then open the file and click on More Tools on the right side of the window. Scroll down to find the certificates icon, and then select Certify Visible Signature from the top of the window. If you do not see the option to certify with a visible signature, you won't be able to digitally sign and certify without first purchasing a document signing certificate through a certificate authority that's compatible with Adobe Acrobat. So the guide that we've posted to the documents page of the website provides a link to vendors that are approved by Adobe for this purpose. After digitally signing using a document signing certificate in Adobe Acrobat, a band will appear across the top of the document displaying the party issuing the signing certificate. Although we've only shown examples of completing an insert with a digital signature using two different softwares, other programs are acceptable, again, as long as additional information or documentation is provided to the auction manager so that we may verify the identity of the signatory. This next slide lists the inserts that may be required with the Part 1 application. A reminder here that if you complete an insert with a digital signature, again, you're not required to have the signature notarized. So the representative designation insert, the representative responsibilities insert, and the legal representative insert will be retained in the Part 1 form for returning bidders. And returning bidders do not need to upload new copies of these inserts unless the information provided has since changed and needs to be updated. Other inserts, like the certifications insert, for example, will not be retained for returning bidders. All bidders, both new and retaining, will need to provide new copies here. If a bidder satisfies all requirements for the Part 1 application, the bidder will receive a Part 1 notification from the auction manager and will then be invited to submit a Part 2 application. New bidders and returning bidders must fulfill the same requirements in the online Part 2 form. With the Part 2 application, bidders submit their indicative offer, provide pre-bid security in the form of cash or in the form of a pre-bid letter of credit, and make a number of additional certifications. Note here that foreign entities will have additional requirements to complete with their Part 2 application. So a bidder's indicative offer is the maximum number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid at the minimum starting price and at the maximum starting price. The indicative offer at the maximum starting price is important because it's used to determine the amount of pre-bid security a bidder must provide with its Part 2 application. And this value also sets the total number of tranches that a bidder will be able to bid in the first round of the auction, which is also called a bidder's initial eligibility. And we'll provide more information on that later in this presentation. There are some additional rules, too, that limit the number of tranches that a bidder can win in the auction. Specifically, a bidder may not win more than 80% of the tranches available in the auction. A bidder may also be limited by a credit-based tranche cap. This value is determined in a creditworthiness assessment made by AAP Ohio that is based on the financial information a bidder provides with its Part 1 application. More specifically, the assessment is made using the credit ratings provided in the online Part 1 form in accordance with the table on this slide. Bidders can review the results of their creditworthiness assessment in their Part 1 notification. Bidders will need to submit pre-bid security with their Part 2 application in the form of cash or a pre-bid letter of credit. The amount of pre-bid security is equal to $500,000 per tranche of a bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And as a reminder, for the upcoming November auction, additional pre-bid security is not required. Bidders must also make a number of certifications with their Part 2 application, certifying to comply with the association and confidential information rules, and certifying to keep information related to the auction confidential. Here I'll give some additional information on another recent change that we've made in response to COVID-19. And as Chantal mentioned earlier, that involves the pre-bid letter of credit. So it used to be that bidders choosing to submit a pre-bid letter of credit as pre-bid security would do so by having the issuing bank overnight the hard copy document to the auction manager's office. Now the pre-bid letter of credit may only be submitted by the issuing bank to the auction manager via email to our email, aep-cbp@nira.com, and hard copies of the pre-bid letter of credit will not be accepted. The standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit has also been modified to allow for its electronic submission. Some of these changes include an update to the contact information and the beneficiary blocks to list our email address, the auction manager's email address. And another change is in paragraph 14, and this now includes language confirming that AAP Ohio may use the electronic PDF as it would a hard copy original. Again, please review the standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit so that you may propose any changes your bank may require, and you may propose these changes and submit them with your Part 1 application. The last few requirements of the Part 2 application include bidders making additional certifications that confirm that any bid submitted in the auction is binding. And lastly, foreign bidders or bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity must provide the executed versions of the draft documents that they provided with their Part 1 application. Note that these executed versions must include any modifications that were required by AAP Ohio. And just like in the online Part 1 form, the online Part 2 form will require bidders to upload inserts. Bidders submitting cash as pre-bid security will need to provide the cash certification insert, but all bidders must provide the Part 2 certifications insert. Again, these inserts can be printed, signed, scanned, and uploaded to the online Part 2 form, or they may be completed with a digital signature. I'll next provide some information on bidding in the auction. So if a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 2 application, that bidder will receive a Part 2 notification from the auction manager and will be eligible to bid in the auction. As we discussed earlier, the format of the auction is a descending clock auction with multiple rounds during which the price ticks down if there is excess supply. And in each round, bidders specify the number of tranches they're willing to supply at the announced price in that round. Each round in the auction is made up of three phases: bidding, calculating, and reporting. Bidders state the number of tranches they're willing to supply at the going price for that round during the bidding phase. And once the bidding phase ends, the calculating phase begins, and the auction manager then tabulates the results of that round and calculates the next round's going price. After the calculating phase ends and the reporting phase begins, bidders will be provided with the going price for the next round. Bidders will also be provided with the results of their own bid in that round. Note that bidders will have access to the results of their own bid, but will not have access to the results of another bidder's bid. At the end of the reporting phase, the bidding phase for the next round will begin, and the cycle continues until the auction ends. If it's determined that there is insufficient supply to ensure competitive bidding, the auction manager may reduce the tranche target for the 12-month product. The specific criteria that could lead to this reduction will be determined ahead of time prior to the auction, but this information will be kept confidential and will not be provided to bidders. However, once specific criteria have been met, the discretion to reduce the tranche target will be eliminated and the value of the target will hold through the end of the auction. So the starting price, or the round one price, is provided to registered bidders ahead of the auction. And a bid in round one is the number of tranches a bidder is willing to supply at the round one price. In round one, a bidder cannot bid more tranches than its initial eligibility. And a reminder here that a bidder's initial eligibility is equal to its indicative offer at the maximum starting price that was provided in the bidder's online Part 2 form. In round one, a bidder can bid a number of tranches equal to its initial eligibility or a number of tranches less than its initial eligibility, but a bidder cannot increase the number of tranches that it bids from round to round. After the bidding phase ends, the auction will enter the calculating phase, and the auction manager will tabulate the results of the round and calculate the next round's going price. Then, this information is made available to bidders during the reporting phase. This slide gives an example of the information provided to bidders in the reporting phase. Bidders will see the next round's price and a range of total excess supply. The actual value of excess supply, which is equal to the total number of tranches bid in the auction minus the tranche target, will fall within this given range. In this example, the range reported to bidders is 51 to 55, which means that the actual value of excess supply can be equal to 51, 55, or any value in between. As I mentioned earlier, bidders will have access to the results of their own bid, but they will not have access to the results of another bidder's bid. So information regarding a bidder's bid, identity, or eligibility will not be accessible to other bidders. Starting in round two, in response to a reduction in price, bidders may either leave their bid the same as in the previous round, or bidders can withdraw tranches from the auction. Again, a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility. In round one, this value is the bidder's initial eligibility. In round two, a bidder's eligibility is equal to the number of tranches that the bidder bid in round one. And in round three and in subsequent rounds, a bidder's eligibility is equal to the eligibility from the prior round minus any tranches that the bidder withdrew from the auction. When a bidder withdraws tranches from the auction, the bidder will be prompted to provide what's called an exit price. This is a best and last offer for the tranches that are being withdrawn from the auction. An exit price must be greater than the current round's going price, but no less than the previous round's going price. So in the example here, a bidder is withdrawing one tranche from the auction. Where it was bidding on six tranches, it's now bidding on five. The bidder submits an exit price of 59.22, which is above the going price of $58 per megawatt hour, but no less than the previous round's price of $60 per megawatt hour. If the auction continues on to round three, the bidder's eligibility will then be five tranches. The auction will continue as long as there is excess supply. The auction will end when the total number of tranches bid is either just equal to the tranche target or if the total number of tranches bid is less than the tranche target. The final price, or the auction clearing price, is determined in one of two ways. If the number of tranches bid is exactly equal to the number of tranches available, the auction clearing price is the going price in that final round. If the total number of tranches bid is less than the total number of tranches available, the auction clearing price is equal to the lowest exit price at which the tranche target is filled. This slide offers an example of how the auction clearing price is calculated in the case where the total number of tranches bid in a round falls below the tranche target. Here you'll see that the total number of tranches bid across all bidders fell from 35 to 30, so the auction will close. To fill the target of 33 tranches, we'll first take the 30 tranches bid at the round 12 going price. We're still short 3 tranches, so we'll need to retain some of the withdrawn tranches, and exit prices submitted by the bidders will be used to set the auction clearing price. To decide which of the tranches will be retained, we'll consider the exit prices from lowest to highest. We need to retain 3 tranches total to fill the target. We'll first select the 2 tranches with the lowest exit price of $38.69 from bidder A, but we're still short 1 tranche. So we'll then select the tranche with the next lowest exit price, which is the single tranche withdrawn by bidder B with an exit price of $38.99. We've now filled the tranche target of 33 tranches, and the auction clearing price will be equal to bidder B's exit price of $38.99. We will not retain any of the withdrawn tranches from bidder C. And all bidders who are holding tranches will receive the same clearing price of $38.99. Before wrapping up the presentation today, I'll provide a few more reminders about the auction. First, bidders will have an opportunity to practice submitting bids using the online auction software in a trial auction on October 28th. During the auction, if you're experiencing any technical difficulties, the backup procedure for submitting your bid is to do so by phone. Technical assistance will be available to take your bid over the phone and submit it into the software on your behalf. The last bid submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software is the bid that counts. A backup bid processed over the phone will only count if it is entered and verified by the technical assistant in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. So it's the bidder's responsibility to provide a complete bid consistent with the CDP rules and to get the bid in on time. For purposes of using the online auction software, please be sure that you're using any of the supported web browsers listed here and that you have a stable internet connection. And lastly, if you need to reach us, please contact us by email at aep-cvp@nira.com. And as a reminder, if you intend to submit a pre-bid letter of credit as pre-bid security, it must be sent electronically to the same email address. This concludes the presentation portion of the webcast. If you have any questions, please locate the Q&A function on the right-hand side of your screen and select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question to the presenters. We'll now pause for a moment to allow you to submit any questions that you may have, and then we'll be back with you shortly. Thank you.